project on Calhoun, South Carolina. The interview is taking place in Clemson, South Carolina on August 31, 1988. The interviewer is W.J. Meginson, and more precisely, we are sitting in a building occupied and owned by Clemson Lodge 254 of AFM. May I ask your name, sir?
My name is J.C. Hubbard, Jr. Most people call me Mike.
Okay, that's what we'll do. And may I ask your age?
I am 67.
First, what does AFM stand for?
AFM, there are two designations. AFM is Accepted Freemasons. Other states use the abbreviation Free and Accepted Masons, but basically they are the same.
And they're all part of a national order.
Yes, they're part of a national order, but each state is an entity unto itself. There is no national organization other than a meeting once a year of the Grand Masters of all the lodges of the United States.
What is your current connection with the Clemson Lodge?
I moved my membership from Columbia Lodge to Clemson Lodge in 1947 when I came here on the faculty. Served as master in 1957 and have been serving as treasurer of the lodge for the last 26 years.
So long familiarity and a good deal of knowledge about what's going on. We have been talking for about an hour and looking at some old minutes of the lodge, and I'd like to talk to you some more about them as we go along, and we may stop periodically with the pause button just to double check some minutes. Would you tell me when the lodge first started and how it started?
The lodge, a group of Masons belonging to other lodges decided that it was time to organize a lodge in Clemson because there were a sufficient number of members to create a lodge. A number of these members, and I've forgotten exactly who they are, but among them were W.W. Clue, O.R. Doyle, A.M. Redfern, and others requested through the Grand Lodge a petition to constitute a lodge here in Clemson.
Just to make sure as we go along, the Grand Lodge is?
The Grand Lodge of Ancient Freemasons of South Carolina, whose home at that time was in Columbia.
So in essence, a group of men here who are already Masons in other lodges want to constitute their own, and they're getting permission from the
Grand Lodge.
Right. You mentioned three names, but I think it's worthwhile, because these are the early founders, to read any of the other names we find here on the first page of your minute book.
Push the button. The applicants were J.H. Hook, A.M. Redfern, A. Shaletta, S. Maynard Martin, N. Benton, O.R. Doyle, B.H. Brawls, J.H. McHugh. Don't want to be repetitious because some of these are repetitious. B.H. Rawls, I think I've listed him one time already. Those are basically the instigators, and H. Benton were the instigators of the petition. And the Grand Lodge granted them an undesignated agreement to let them work in a lodge under dispensation in Calhoun, South Carolina, beginning sometime around October 19th, 1903.
Now, that's the first date that you have that they showed they actually met.
That is correct.
Before being completely constituted.
Right.
And I think there's an interesting sentence we just looked at saying that they are asking to be permitted to meet at this place.
Yes, and this place, I would presume, was what is now referred to as Calhoun Corners or Boggs Store, or I believe was originally owned by Doyle.
We've been working for the last hour trying to figure out the early meeting place, and we'll come to that during the course of the tape. But I think there's another clue in your charter that says you can meet at Calhoun, South Carolina, or within 3 miles of this place.
That's correct, yes.
So apparently, in the minutes, they were not particularly concerned with the physical meeting space
correct.
As much as the town.
Mm-hmm.
And although you were called the Clemson Lodge, there was no incorporation called Clemson, so the town itself was incorporated as Calhoun, and that's what appears
that's correct.
In your minutes.
Actually, I don't think Clemson was incorporated until about 47. It may have been a little earlier than that.
1943, they changed
43.
The name from Calhoun to Clemson. Read, if you will, the names of the officers of the first year.
The officers that were elected on for the after the Constitution on the 9th of December 1903.
And that's when you got the charter.
That's when we got the charter, and we were chartered as Clemson Lodge number 254 AFM. And the officers at that time were W.W. Clue as Worshipful Master.
Which is your top office.
That's right. O.R. Doyle as Senior Warden, A.M. Redfern as Junior Warden, A. Shaletta as Treasurer, and H. Benton as Secretary.
Okay, we'll look just a little bit more in a moment or two about the minutes, but it might help first if you would give a very brief explanation of what the Masons are and what activities they perform outside of their own internal and fraternal order.
The Masonic Order is a group of men who as any organization of this nature is a fraternal organization, and their main thrust is charity. Their philosophy is brotherhood, not only within the membership, but brotherhood of all mankind, that all men are under one God, that we recognize this, and we accept a profession of belief in deity to become a member.
One of the questions that I asked you earlier was whether perhaps as one of the halls that existed in the area that the lodge might ever have met at the Wesleyan Methodist Church, and you said that wasn't likely.
No, that was not the case. You will find that although they aren't openly opposed to it, they do not encourage members to be members of the church to become members of the fraternity.
And I believe you also said that the Roman Catholics, at least earlier, opposed membership in Freemasonry.
One of the bulls written by the earlier popes did, to the extent of excommunication. However, in the past few years, this has been rescinded. And it's a little vague from the standpoint that the Orthodox Jew will not take an obligation on anything but the Torah. The Christian will accept an obligation on the Old and New Testament, and the Mohammed will accept an obligation on the Quran. So these are the three instruments that you will generally find exhibited in the center of the lodge.
In matter of fact, however, particularly in the South, in the United States, most lodge members are going to be Protestants.
By and large, yes.
And of course, in, say, 1900, or about the time you were organized, there would have been virtually no Jews or Catholics in this immediate area anyhow, so that would have accounted for the great bulk of the population
We have had Jewish members of this lodge, yes, going back to the 20s.
Mm-hmm. And of course it was, I think, about then or perhaps a bit later before the Catholic Church in town was founded.
Right.
So the number would obviously have been
very
sparse. It was also obviously not true, as we've noted, the hostility toward Masons was obviously not true for Episcopalians. Reading from your very first minutes of the first meeting while you were still in the dispensation, the application of Reverend K.G. Finley, who was the Episcopal rector, not accompanied by a fee, was also read. Our Constitution requiring no fees for ministers. Mr. Finley's application took the same course as the others.
Right.
And
any minister of God may join any lodge upon an investigation of his character and be accepted without recourse to fee or dues.
I'd like to read just a few of the names from this first page or two to make sure that we're getting them all in, and I may need your help with one. Another one of the people mentioned and seems to have been involved in commercial enterprises in the area is W.M. Lavelle, or Level, and this fellow whose name is...
Newsom.
G.E. Newsom.
Newsom.
I don't think we read his name before. And your applicants at the first meeting were J.W. Gant, S.W. Reeves, A.S. Sheely, J.B. McCracken, the Reverend Finley, Thomas Keat, and E.A. Seemeyer, I believe it is.
Yes.
So this accounts for presumably most of your early members.
Right.
And then we also see that at the second meeting that the minutes state that the charter has been received, so then you are fully constituted.
Right. That was on December 19. That was 10 days after the receipt of the charter.
You want to read that sentence for us?
The worshipful master noted that our charter had been received and all who desired to do so could demit to this particular lodge. I found something. Oh, it's later on. Okay.
We'll come to any of those things later. As I said, one of the issues that you and I have both been working on is the question of where you first met, and at least one hypothesis is that you met at what the Presbyterians refer to in their records as Doyle Hall, and is more generally known in later years as Box Store.
This seems to be, as near as I can ascertain, the first location, physical location, of the lodge.
Unfortunately, your minutes don't tell us, and we don't yet seem to have any other evidence, although I'm going to read some more newspapers and see what we find out. But let's also notice something that you and I ran across a few minutes ago in working through the minutes. In that first, second meeting also in November 1903, it said a note of thanks of the lodge which extended to Brother O.R. Doyle, who at that time was senior warden, for his generous contribution of walnut lumber, and of course he had extensive lumber areas, and to Brother J.H. Hook, for his painstaking promptness in working it into lodge furniture. It seems, as best we can find, you don't have that furniture anymore, do you?
I really don't know where that furniture is, because most of what is in here seems to be made of pine, looking at the grain of the wood.
And from a somewhat later period of time, as best we can guess.
Right.
And there is also a statement that Brother Shaletter explained that the reason the lodge chairs, other ones apparently, cost more than the first estimate was because the estimate was based on last year's catalog and that prices for furniture had advanced during the past year.
Yes.
Same as now.
Yes.
Incidentally, one of the other things we find in the early minutes is that Brother Shaletter was in charge of the refreshment committee.
Yes.
Given his culinary abilities, and in particular with pastries and bakery,
well,
stuff that sounds quite appropriate.
I believe, what was Shaletter's position? Oftentimes,
treasurer.
All right, well, he held the money bag, so he knew what we could afford.
And could probably do it on a cheaper basis,
right,
since he baked himself. Let me stop this for just a second and take a moment to make sure we pick up names of any early members. Okay, two or three other names we're picking up from early minutes are E.T. Hudson, who was a Tyler. There is an E. Level, who was a member, obviously, because he was pro tem officer. And at the November 20, 1903 meeting, a visiting brother, A.J. Boggs, from Pendleton Lodge, and at that time he was clerk of the circuit court in Pickens and also related to a number of people here in town. Members at the first, one of the other first meetings include a J.S. Goodman from Blue Ridge Lodge, Walhalla, W.T. Brock from Sherrill, South Carolina, and Level, who I mentioned before, from the Central Lodge and quickly becoming an acting officer. Another visiting member is still another Boggs, W.A. Boggs, from the Pendleton Lodge as well. Let me get you, if you will, to read also from one of your early minutes about the constitution of the lodge and also some connections with Clemson College.
Well, a letter was received from the Grand Master John R. Bellinger stating that he would be here on the 18th of December 1903 for the purpose of constituting the lodge, installing the lodge officers elected, and to take part in the laying of the cornerstone of the agricultural building on the 19th of December.
Now, this agricultural building was at the site of what later became the library, and now it's called Sykes Hall, I believe.
I'm not absolutely positive of that.
For outsiders, let me ask you to explain why the Masons would be involved in laying a cornerstone.
Well, another tenet of the order is education.
Mm-hmm.
It has always been the policy of Masons, when invited, to lay the cornerstone. If you would look at the cornerstone that was recently removed from Tillman Hall, that was laid by the Grand Lodge of South Carolina, as was the one on the agricultural building and the one on Sykes Hall in 1937 or 38.
So that has been a very typical procedure, and obviously even before there was a lodge here in Calhoun or Clemson, the Masons were involved in the laying of the cornerstone at Tillman, and I guess what was that, 1892 or 3?
Somewhere back then, yes.
Fairly early.
This is not done by a local lodge, but is done by the Grand Lodge of South Carolina.
Which is also why your Grand Master from
Columbia
is going to be here.
Right.
A couple of other early names we turn up is W.P. Sloan, applying for membership in the beginning of 1904. Still another name of early membership in December 1904 is J.P. Lewis, who was from a well-established local family. It sounds like in at least a fair number of cases with, for example, Redford, Martin, and others, that quite a few of the people in the early years, and perhaps still today, were connected with Clemson College.
Yes, W.W. Clue, who was the first worshipful master, was a professor in engineering graphics. S. Maynard Martin headed up the math department. G.H. All later was in dean in agriculture. We have had Billy Brackett was dean of chemistry. And you could go on down the list looking at the pictures of the past masters. And are still today, a lot of the people that are members of this lodge are affiliated with Clemson University.
And in a few minutes we'll look at some of those and get particularly some of the Calhoun men, but a number of others as well. Not only are these occupied or involved with Clemson by employment, but at least several of you have been Clemson graduates as well, including, I think, yourself.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You were at Clemson in?
I finished here in 1942. it was one of those situations where they handed you your diploma, your commission, your travel orders, and within 10 days you were somewhere in the Army, and within 3 months you were overseas.
So a very quick movement. Some other names that we find fairly early are D.H. Henry in 1905, and also early in 1905, for the first time, F.H. Klinkscales shows up as attending, so that gives us a clue to when he may have first arrived in the town. And still another one is P.S. McCollum. In our efforts to try to figure out something about where you were meeting, we likewise find in February 1905 that the Blue Lodge is going to be paying insurance for the coming year, so obviously in some form or another they were either helping to insure their own possessions, or I would guess more likely contributing to the insurance cost of whoever's building you were using.
Yes.
And again, we have some suspicions that that is at what is now Calhoun Corners, because it did provide for some civic activities as well. Also in 1905, you're purchasing a desk for the Blue Lodge, and at that time it was going to be about $5, so that was probably expensive then, but sounds enormously cheap now. Looking at the minutes in 1907, we see a report of one of your standing committees, the Hull Committee, and they're talking first about buying 9 sets of blinds. You know what I'm going to do tomorrow is count the number of windows upstairs in Calhoun Corners and see how many there are, and I bet that matches. That'll tell something else. And the Hull Committee also says that they're going to be authorized to have the leaks in the roof repaired, and that's interesting. And it's also interesting that if, in fact, you were meeting in what became known as Boggs Store, that building was owned by O.R. Doyle, who at that particular time was your worshipful master. Certainly by 1908, if not earlier, a couple of other names we find that are of note in the community are F.S. Crawford and B.F. Robertson, and I assume that Robertson, in this case, is the elder one.
No.
In 1908?
Yes, in all probability.
But the other one will show up later, you tell me.
Yes, Ben was elected, the younger, was elected worshipful master of this lodge on December 1, 1927.
Here's something perhaps a little bit less pleasant than some of the other things that we're looking at, that one of your members seems to have gotten in trouble first with the civil law and then therefore with the lodge. Says that he was in an intoxicated condition and had in his house at Clemson College a Negro woman, and his conduct was on that occasion to his disgrace and so forth. And they also says by a witness that he had the woman with him overnight and until noon the next day, and that also he was in an intoxicated condition and committed a public indecency at Calhoun Station, and further that he was drinking with a Negro man of bad character. So in all of these he seemed to be getting into trouble. Sort of ambiguous testimony, but one of the people I noticed who came to say that he did in fact seem intoxicated and so forth, that he was cursing in the presence of women, is an uncle of mine, W.W. Smith, who was not a member of the lodge but was brought in, stated as a profane. And another man whose name we have trouble reading, E.L.B.O.L.L.O.N.T. or something like that, was also giving some testimony and referring by Mr. Lewis to apparently the fellow in trouble being in a stockade, so he may have been over at where the convicts were being held at Clemson College. Well, let's turn and see what we find further about where all the lodges meeting and its move eventually to first support the YMCA and secondly to create your own building. In skimming through some other minutes, one of the incidental things we pick up is a charge from the Clemson Club for $1.50 for board and lodging, apparently, for one of your visiting dignitaries from elsewhere in the state. But particularly in 1914, we get something of interest in terms of downtown Clemson area. I wonder if you would either summarize or read for us what was happening that year.
Well, basically, Dr. L.C. Martin presented through the secretary a proposition for Clemson Lodge to occupy the upper story of a two-story brick building at Clemson College, which was to be finished sometime around September 1914.
I believe, doesn't it also give the dimensions of the building?
Yes, it said that the second story will be a hall about 30 feet wide and about 70 feet long. And he said that he was willing to rent it furnished with such partitions as the lodge might need, and wired for electricity for $200 a year, payable semi-annually at $100 a year, every 6 months, or in quarterly installments of $50. He said that it was then moved and seconded in the lodge that we accept this, and the motion being adopted, it was ordered to be voted on, the results of which was unanimously in favor of accepting Dr. Martin's order, offer. And it seems that at that time, on or about the 14th of March or shortly thereafter, they indeed did move from Bog Store.
Now, it would have been just a little bit later because this is only a proposal to
yes.
build, and
mm-hmm.
it would have been the fall, apparently, before
right.
the building was ready.
Mm-hmm.
So that's fall of 1914. About how long would you have stayed at Martin's Drugstore?
Probably until sometime in 1916, I would imagine, because in 1915, the cornerstone was laid for what is now Holzendorf Hall, formerly the YMCA, and that information can be picked up pretty well in the file of S. Maynard Martin in the Clemson Library, at which time he made a short talk, and the Masonic Order made a contribution to that particular building when it was being erected. And the YMCA extended the use of one of its rooms as a lodge hall, which continued probably until the erection of the present building in which the Masonic Order meets.
And by contribution, I believe you're talking certainly in terms of money.
Yes.
And also doing the laying of the cornerstone as well with the speech that you referred to.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Apparently, your plans to get into the YMCA were a little bit delayed, for we find some more information in early 1916.
Yes, in January, meeting January 22nd, 1916, it said that a liberal discussion of the reasons for the lodge not having moved into the new quarters in the YMCA building brought out the point that our bylaws might conflict with the uniform bylaws of the Grand Lodge, and that the proper certification for the new room might not have reached the Grand Master. Brother Robertson moved that our bylaws be amended to conform with the uniform bylaws. This motion was carried. Brother Henry moved that the past masters of this lodge take up the matter of certification of the new lodge, new hall, and sign over the lodge seal any papers necessary to the certification, and this motion was carried. So this yeah. was presented. Anytime you move, you have to have the approval and certification of the Grand Lodge that the facilities are adequate for which the purpose they're intended.
So if I can translate a bit, and correct me if I'm wrong, that by January of 1916, the YMCA building was ready, but for internal problems you had, or not problems, internal policies, you had to make sure that everything was
That's correct.
Ready to
mm-hmm.
transfer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in just a minute, we'll look on and see about some more future building plans of the lodge, but first let's note a couple of other financial transactions of some interest going on. One is paying in 1914 brothers Klinkscales and Crowther $15 for use of an automobile in conveying one of the lodge up to Highlands, North Carolina for a meeting, and then $5 in favor of them also for trams attending the funeral for one of your members. And we saw another member, John S. Goodman, for whom you provided Masonic rites at the Old Stone Church. Let's skip on to the 1920s, at which point you're ready to, just one moment, you're ready to begin thinking about getting a building of your own. Okay, starting about 1916, you must have moved into the YMCA. What's happening in 1927?
Well, apparently the lodge was paying and held a lease on a room in the YMCA, and according to the records of December 1, 1927, Worshipful Brother Martin announced the expiration of the lease on the lodge room and asked for a discussion of the renewal. It was suggested that the lease be renewed for a term of 1 year with an increase of $200 a year at that time. It seems that about this time there was a decision made to build their own building.